This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Coaches, thank you for joining us once again to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Coulter, the Coach Development Coordinator at Basketball Victoria. To my left, we have the High Performance Coach for the Country Women, Zoe Carr. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
And we have the man that needs no introduction, but we'll get one anyway, the High Performance Coach for the Vic Country Men, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Rob, appreciate the kind words. I don't know if I've got to that level yet, but we'll keep working on it.
Your reputation precedes you, of course, as always. Coaches, thank you very much for jumping into the podcast once again. If you do need to contact us for any reason or if you want to continue the discussion after the podcast, you can do so with the hashtag Talking Split on social media. You can get Nathan Cooper-Brown on Twitter via the handle
at CoachNCB.
And you can get Zoe Carr on
at ZoeCarr85.
And you can get me on at Rob Coulter. If you do have anything of interest, you are more than welcome, of course, to email it through as well. Or if you just see anything funny that makes you think of coaching, by all means, the hashtag Talking Split will be a great one to go with. You are more than welcome to send in any questions you have, and we'll try and get to them on a mailbag episode at some stage. Or if it's a big enough topic, we can absolutely discuss that as a group. We have had a camp run over the weekend for the MPP athletes. Coops, how did it go on your end?
It was fantastic. Yeah, a wonderful way for us to finish the calendar. So it was our MPP graduation camp. So we bring in, obviously, all of our MPP cohort from both country and metro. We had a few invitees who'd earned it through their attitude, their aptitude, throughout the season. And it was a chance for us to get back to a little bit more teaching coming off Giddy Daniels Cup, which made it really fun from a coaching perspective. So we also tried a few things. We tried to be a little bit more innovative in terms of the first session of the day. We did some positional breakdowns. Then we actually just gave the athletes free play. So we said, look, you guys sort it out. You know, who are our leaders? Who are our problem solvers? 3 5-minute games running clock with a 90-second self-evaluation in between. And then that was the premise for what we were working on the next session. So instead of trying to force feed some of the curriculum, we really tried to lean back on the athletes of what they needed. And it was great. The level of competition, the learning, the enjoyment was awesome. So, yeah, from a coaching standpoint, yeah, again, can't reiterate enough how good it was to finish the year with that camp.
Yep. How about on the girls' side, Zoe?
Yeah, it was really good. I found that we had the same structure, so we did the positional work, some shooting, and then let the athletes play. The interesting part with the play, teach, play, I guess, structure was the difference between the two scrimmages after teaching, but being able to see exactly where they needed that focus rather than, oh, we think you need to learn this. It was, no, well, they actually need this, this and this. I think if we had structured the session before leaving here, it probably would have looked pretty different and may not have hit on the things that they needed. So the pleasing part was to be able to see after the teaching middle phase, as well as the showing some film in the breaks, was how much that did improve. And, you know, again, it's showing, I guess, how much tailoring your sessions to your athletes rather than yourself, how valuable that can be.
Yeah, great point.
So really interesting on my end. Did that put you guys under more pressure as coaches to have to evaluate and then plan at the same time rather than going in with this preconceived idea of this is what we're going to do?
Yeah, it certainly did. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, we figured out, you know, as we were going through that process that we needed to be more deliberate in, you know, who was looking for what, and, you know, could we do a better job of delegating some roles and responsibilities to coaches just so we could clean that up. But it was, yeah, with its own challenges, you know, 30-minute break, you know, we got one or two coaches on the film, the rest of the guys are breaking down the session and then recreating or creating a session plan for the following one was... Yeah, it was tough, but also one of the reasons that we did that was to try and align with the pressure that you would see in a nationals tournament or an international tournament of short turnaround. You know, what's the most important aspects of teaching we need to get across to the athletes? And in that respect, that was a big positive.
Yep, absolutely. So, coaches, that is not our topic for discussion today. Our topic today is, semi-controversial, I guess, to a number of levels. The do's and don'ts of coaching. Now, we're going to hit on a number of things. This is not to be critical or anything like that. This is genuinely some things that coaches may not have actually thought about within their coaching. Sometimes they are things that we just need to tidy up a little bit as coaches. Sometimes they're going to be things where, you know, it's something that we already do well, but we can always do better. So we'll go off on various tangents over the course of this, as every good podcast does. So even if we don't stick with something that we're going with, roll with us, see how you go. If there is anything that we don't hit on, you are more than welcome to shoot through an email. You're more than welcome to jump on social media and use the hashtag TalkingSplit with, yeah, I agree with this, this and that. Don't necessarily agree with that, but had you guys considered this? So more than happy to hear from other coaches in that space as well. So we'll start off with the don'ts because I am a negative person. And of course, we start with the negatives to begin. So the first one I've got is don't bag on other coaches. Like it's a really important part that we are all in this together. And it sounds like real cliched, especially after the last couple of years. But as coaches, we are in this, I want to say, business together of helping athletes. That's what we are about as coaches. We do it tough. Like we've spoken a lot about how hard it is to be a coach at the best of times, in particular with all the pressures we put on ourselves and the external pressures. We don't need to be, I suppose, eating our own from the inside as well. We deal with enough. So think about what you say can easily be passed on to someone else, which is passed on to someone else, which invariably gets back. Like we've all seen the whispers that sort of get around, and you know what you said at the start is not necessarily what comes out at the end, and it's been changed 15 different times along the way as well. So I think one area we do have to be really diligent in is not bagging on other coaches. Okay, Zoe, you got any thoughts along those? And don't say yes, you should.
No, I wasn't going to say that. It's probably the number one thing as a coach. You know, we are the only, and I think I've spoken about it on the pod before, but we are the only fraternity, I guess, in the game that doesn't stick together at times. You know, referees stick together, administrations stick together, parents stick together, players stick together, but because of, you know, through competition of roles and things like that, and ambition, and ambition's great, I'm not saying don't have ambition, but it can lead to a really toxic environment and a really lonely environment. You know, I remember actually watching you both at Geelong at your nationals, and you had, you know, a broken in half team, most of them were injured, you know, came up against a super talented New South Country team who ended up beating you guys. The night before, you'd won a massive semi-final and, you know, people couldn't get near you. But after that grand final, you guys were just standing there by yourselves because it was just so lonely. And so if we have this, I guess, culture of, you know, I wanted that job, he or she got it, so now they're in the gun, that's just going to create an even more lonely environment. We're going to lose coaches for it. So I think if we can get to a point where, you know, we're sticking together as a group, it's okay to be disappointed if you miss out, or, you know, that's fine, but we've got to keep in mind coaches don't appoint themselves. I think we send the anger or the feeling probably in the wrong direction. They don't sit there and go, well, I'm going to take this NBL one job. Someone has appointed them. So, you know, I think if we can stick together a little bit more, it can become a better environment, a more enjoyable environment, and we're likely to retain coaches from it.
Good to relive 2014, wasn't it, Coach?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Really nice. Enjoyed that.
Just destroyed my mood, so thanks. Yeah,
exactly. Way to start out.
Yeah, a little bit of a downer. But no, it is accurate.
Like, it was a good example.
No, it's a great example. There's no question with that. But it is something that we have to be really mindful of too, is that we are all in this for the athletes. Like, and we talk about career progression for coaches and those types of things. We all want the next job and what does that lead to next and those kinds of things. But we have to be really mindful too that the people are doing this for the right reasons. They want to be coaches. They want to put in and help other people. We want to try and support that, not hinder that environment. And that's difficult, of course, but you know, you've got to be really careful. In particular, like the amount of times, and this a little bit of a tangent, the amount of times I've walked into a stadium, people haven't realised I'm there. I've been sitting in the stand and you hear some of the comments made by either parents or other coaches without the awareness of who's around them. That stuff gets back pretty quickly. And it's really easy as well to be not blacklisted. It's probably not the right word for it, but it's very easy to have that reputation that this is a coach that doesn't support other coaches, and that impacts on other people having jobs down the line somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some Australian culture stuff around tall poppy syndrome, you know, that filters in here on the back of what you both are talking about in terms of competition for jobs. You know, it's not the United States. There's not a job for everybody. It's a really, really tight, almost highly volatile environment as people continue to try and get those limited spots that are available. But at the end of the day, you know, I know I'm just piggybacking on what you guys already said, but I think it's valid. Is, you know, you don't go into a coaching interview and the panel, whoever it may be, they don't ask you who are you better than, or they don't ask you to, you know, rip on the previous coach or explain how you're better than that person. It's not you. You're more often than not getting hired because of the network you've built, because of the strong relationships, the positive aspects that you can bring to connections. So if we can continue to redefine, you know, how we're doing things, especially around a more positive and supportive coaching fraternity, you know, we're only going to get better as a community, and then the athletes are going to get better. And like both of you said, you know, that's what we're in it for. It's all about the athletes.
Yeah, and I think with, you know, you hit on a really big one when you're sitting and watching a game and something happens that you may not agree with. You know, there may be a sub or a timeout at a time or whatever. We're not sitting here saying you can't have assessments or ideas or, you know, something, you know, but try just putting a sentence like this in front of what you're about to say. So if I was coaching that and all things are okay, and then go because, you know, particularly with subs, if you're not down on the bench, you don't know what's going on. An athlete could have ran past and said, hey, I'm cooked, I need to come out. Now, you haven't heard that or seen that, so you're making a judgment on a coach making a call without all the information. So it is okay to then go, hey, if all things are okay, you know, and I was in that position, I probably wouldn't make that sub. So then it's just attacking it from a slightly different angle as opposed to just why, you know, the things I've sort of heard, why is he or she taking them off now? Like, that's terrible and blah, blah, blah. They could be carrying an injury that we don't know about. They could be on a minutes restriction. They could be ill. They could be, like, there's a magnitude of things that could be going on. And we sometimes sit in judgment of that, and I think it's unfair. And as you said, Rob, you know, that then filters back, you know, in some way, shape or form, probably in a different form, which is often worse than what has originally been said. So, you know, if we can, as a group, I guess, commit to trying to be better. And I'll put my hand up and say I've been bad at this at times. You know, I've said things I shouldn't have, and but then I've had things said about me and realized, damn, if that's how I'm making people feel, that's, I don't want to be a part of that. So, you know, as a group, as a collective, if we can commit to being better at that, I think it's just going to be make us better as a fraternity, which will make the players better.
Should we add a Walt Whitman quote here via, ooh, the great Ted Lasso?
Yes, do it.
Be curious, not judgmental.
Yep. Always a good Ted throwback. Surely we're getting season 3 fairly soon.
I thought you were going to say barbecue sauce. Like,
hey, up for that too. But it's one of those things where you don't necessarily know what other people are going through. Like, I know, I mean, we've been in situations, Zoe, where we've finished a game. Our parents were walking through the foyer afterwards and heard an opposition coach bagging out the fact that how we coached and what we did. And it's like, hold on. Like, they don't need to be hearing that on the way at the door either. So just be very mindful of what you're saying, who you're saying it to. Again, put yourself in the other person's shoes. Would you like to have that said about you? Probably not. So don't go and say it about someone else. It's a really easy one on that one, I think.
And if you're going to bag out another coach and what they did, just make sure you win.
Wow. Okay.
Just throwing that out there.
Speaking of barbecue sauce, I feel like there was a little bit of sauce on the end of that one. But it is one of those things that we do have to be really conscious of as coaches. We do want to build a good coaching community and fraternity, and we'll talk about the network stuff a little bit later in the do's. One area that will usually get my ire is not necessarily just failing jump shooters in games, because that will always annoy me, but it is don't talk to other coaches in game. Like, if other coaches are having a discussion with the referee or talking to one of their players on the court, as the opposition coach, don't engage in that. That's not your area. That's not your job. Like, stay in your lane with that. That's one of those areas where, okay, you can hear the message potentially. Like, you can, okay, that's what they're talking about. No worries. I can adjust my coaching. So certainly pay attention to it, but don't engage with the other coach. And that flows on to the refereeing as well. If someone has a crack about a call that's made by a ref, you don't need to piggyback on top of that and then, oh, but if you're going to start calling, no. Like, this is not a ganging up on the referee situation. This is the coach will have their say. Leave it be. If you want to then have a discussion with a ref or something else, that's your business to do it. But it's not a conversation back and forwards. That is one thing, and I'll be completely honest, I don't tend to deal with it well, because my usual reaction is, the hell are you talking to? Like, are you talking to me? Like, it's that sort of thing. It usually does frustrate me. So if I can give any advice to coaches out there, please don't be talking to the other coach during the game. Afterwards, no worries. Be mates, be enemy. Be whatever you want to be after the game. But during the game, there should be no back and forth between the two coaches there.
Yeah, it's the fastest way to create an additional confrontation during the game. You've got enough to think about. You don't need to be worried about what the other coach is doing and saying, you know. It's focus on things that you can control, focus on things that, you know, your team, what's up next, you know, what they're, if they're, and it often comes, like you said, when a coach is probably getting into a referee, because there's this thought for some reason that, you know, the opposition coach is getting into the ref, therefore they're about to get calls. And I think we've all been in that spot before where, you know, sometimes it's happened, sometimes it hasn't. Just stay out of it. Focus on what you can focus on, and, you know, you don't need that confrontation or additional confrontation in your game. You know, what's your next offense going to be? What's your next defense going to be? Grab your point guard over and start talking to them. You know, whatever, you know, just move on from that. Allow them to act however they want, and I guess just be better.
Yeah, I think from a coaching TID standpoint too, if I'm watching someone, a prospective state coach or select team coach, and they start engaging with the other coach, more often than not, I'm putting a line through their name, because they've immediately shown me that it's about them and it's not about the athletes and it's not about teaching and it's not about enjoying that experience. It's about them, their ego, and then playing off against the other coach. And you know, in terms of my program, and I know I speak for Zoe as well, is we don't want those sorts of coaches in our program.
Yep. To piggyback onto that one, and I'm acutely aware that both of you have coffees on this table at the moment, do not coach with a coffee in your hand, coaches. Like, it is the easiest way to make it look like you've checked out. This is just something you do. Oh, I can just do this whilst I'm sipping my latte on the sidelines. That's not the perception we want to give off. Like, we want, like, by all means, if you need a drink, have a drink. That's okay. That's not a problem. But the coffee thing, I don't know why it annoys me so much. Like, it is, I'm not a coffee drinker, so that might have a bit to do with it. But it is one of those things. It's like, you can't just wait an hour to have a coffee. Like, it's, I don't know. Are you guys similar with this, or am I at an island with this? Because I understand if I am.
Coops is very big on the no coffee. I am too, but I remember one of our camps, Coop started the camp with the coaches saying, right, no coffees, and the looks on their faces, because they're like, oh, I would have had it before if I knew. But it's a great point. Like, it just, to me, it just comes across, it gives the perception of almost laziness, to be honest. You know, it's casual, it's something you don't really care about. You know, it's, yeah, and I suppose to just piggyback onto that as well, another sort of don't for me would be, don't get parents to buy you coffees. Like, if you want a coffee, buy your own coffee.
Finish it before the game. Finish it before the game.
Or before the game, or before practice, whatever it is. But if parents are buying you coffees, you're having it at practice or at the game, because that's where you see them. But I think you can just run into so much trouble with coach parents. A lot of parents are lovely, and comes with no expectation, or, you know, nothing like that. And then there are just that small percentage that think there is something owed by the fact that for the last however many weeks of the season, they've bought you a coffee every week. And so because of that, you know, they should be getting this. And it's a small percentage, but just don't put yourself in that position.
For me, it relates directly to preparation, that you know, how you come into a practice or a game, there should be habits that align with the goals. There should be a level of preparation and representation that shows what you're about and how serious you're taking this thing. And so if I'm looking at a guy walking in with a cap on backwards, a coffee and thongs, I'm like, well, how much are they really into this thing? You know, not going to crucify anybody. Like sometimes if a team manager gets you a coffee late, like all those sorts of things, yeah, we get that. But is it part of your preparation? Is coffee part of you getting to a level that you can best facilitate your athletes? Great. Then make sure you finish it before practice starts. So that's where I'm coming from in the aspects. It's like, it's not about the coffee. It's about the prep. It's about, are you really into this thing?
And if it is about the coffee and you're needing the caffeine, go and do a little bit of research on the life cycles of caffeine in particular. Coffee 5 minutes before a game is not going to jolt you awake suddenly for the next hour or so. You need to have that thing about 2 hours beforehand, and that will keep you awake. So
it will sure keep you asleep after. Keep you awake afterwards. Excuse
exactly
me.
Right. And that's what we need, more coaches not sleeping.
Yeah.
Like it's you know, we have to be very careful in that space as well. So it is, like I like the slant on that, Coops, with the preparation side of things. Like if you can't get your coffee done before the game, what chance are you for the rest of it? So there's a lot of things that we can put in there. So one of the big ones, and we've touched on this a lot during the various areas of the podcast, a massive don't for me is put winning over development. And that is, we're not going to spend too much time on this, obviously, because I feel like this is the...
I think it's
the,
a weekly topic.
Yeah, yeah, I feel like
we find our way back here every week somehow.
And by no means are we sitting there saying, coaches, don't try and win games. You can absolutely try and win games, but you should not be shelving all signs of development to try and win a game of basketball that in, you know, 5 weeks' time, you're probably going to forget who won and who lost. Like, I remember this, that I was coaching my own story
time. Story time.
Yes.
I was coaching a little under-12s game. I want to say maybe those kids are under-20s now, so that's how long ago it was. So we played against a team that was a shuffle team in under-12s, which still blows my mind. Like, how can you do that in under-12s? But they were real good at first option. And I know that for 8 weeks before we played that team, because they smoked us the first time around and they were a little bit chirpy about it as well, for 8 weeks, we worked on trapping the on-ball screen in under-12s. And there was a massive part of me that says, yeah, good job, Rob. There's also a big part of me that says, I actually don't remember if we beat him the second time or not. Like, that was 100% a case of me putting a win before developing the athletes. And that's, you know, on reflection, obviously a bad thing. I'm sure if we won that game on the night, I was pretty happy on the drive home. But it is one of those areas where it's like, actually, think of that, how much I could have been doing skill development-wise with those kids, rather than teaching to trap an on-ball. Now, to be fair, trapping an on-ball screen is something that you should be able to do at some point, but do they need it in under-12s? Probably not, I would suggest. Like, there are other ways to negate on-ball screens in under-12s. So that is one area I would be highly recommending to coaches, is not shelving the development for a casual win during your games.
If you're worried about expectations and the impact that winning is potentially going to have on your young career or career in youth basketball, please go out there and connect with your director of coaching. Have that conversation around, what is the expectation of me here? Is there part of this that is winning? You know, is that something that we are focusing on? My hope is that the director of coaching then is able to put your mind at ease and say, no, the idea is that we're trying to improve athletes. We've got a pathway in our association that connects with these young men or women being able to go on and do some special things in the sport. And then that should allow you to go back to whatever grade it is, whether it's VC or regional 27, and just put the focus in helping these athletes become better, better basketballers and better people, because that's the job. That's the job. Until you start getting up and money starts impacting the game, it's not about winning. It's about having fun. It's about developing. And it's about using sport as a vehicle to help people become the best versions of themselves.
Well, the irony is I was a director of coaching at that stage. So I only have myself to blame, nobody else.
I think with, you know, that also comes, I hear a lot, especially on Friday nights, court time isn't equal on Friday nights in rep basketball. And to a degree, I agree with it. Like, maybe once you sort of start hitting 16s and 18s and kids are starting to sort of look ahead to whether they're going to be, college, go to seniors, decide whether they actually want to try and seek this as a profession. 12s and 14s, there's no excuse. VC down to the lowest grade, I don't care. All players should play. You know, I've watched, I go out on Friday nights and I watch games and, you know, I might be waiting for a game that I want to watch or whatever it might be. And I look over at some benches and I see kids sitting on the sideline and they've sat there for the majority of the game. They might get a couple of minutes here and there. And I just see the looks on their face and they just hate it. And I just think, well, that's just a surefire way to get these kids to quit or hate the game or whatever it might be. And just there's just no excuse. I don't think probably a controversial thing I'm about to say, and I suppose I'll say it anyway. Nothing is more important than development, not a VC title, not under 14 clubs, none of that. You know, I didn't have a wonderful sort of career. Like I certainly wasn't storied or, you know, a superstar of the WNBL. But I played 152 games in the WNBL. I got basketball took me around the world. You know, I got to have all these amazing experiences. I didn't go to 14 clubs. I don't think anybody sort of looks back and goes, oh, that's the moment. You know, that wasn't the moment. That moment sort of came later when I was in, you know, 16s and 18s. So I think putting those sort of things ahead of development and we can all get carried away, and it's not necessarily anyone in particular's fault, because, you know, parents and administration, they want to make those things because, one, it's, you know, the kids are excited about it and they want to do it, but, you know, it's also a great look for the club if they're continually making these things or winning these things. But really, it's just got to come down to, especially in those formative years of 12s and 14s, you know, what's going to get them better, what's going to help them progress as basketballers.
I did some crunching of the numbers recently, and just in Victoria, based on roster positions and VJBL participation, just on the men's side of the program, it's around 2% of all VJBL athletes go on to play in the NBL. So thinking it's only 2%, and we're actually starting to do a pretty good job of identifying that 2% pretty early, what do you guys think the role is now for the 98%, you know, who love the sport and love being there? You know, it's the things that we're talking about. So the other part of that too, I think, is, you know, go and look at some of the work being done with our friends in Belgium that we've spoken about on the pod before. A lot of the Scandinavian regions in their shift in mindset around enjoyment and positivity and just engaging these really elite athletes in just getting them to fall in love with the process and stay in love with the sport and the kind of impact that has on later success and all the things that we obviously that we're looking for in high performance. So it's not just us. You know, it's serious programs around the world that are valuing development over winning.
Yep. It's interesting you hit on that. I saw a Belgium LTAD team play against, I think it was maybe Norway's LTAD team in soccer the other week. And it was literally kids that have not made anything to this point, but have either shown an inclination with size, athleticism, or just general IQ. Super smart, but super unco. It's like, look, we'll wait for them to become coordinated because they just haven't grown at the same rate as other kids. But it's a really interesting point you make, that you've got to keep those kids engaged in the sport. And we see it a lot that, and we'll do a podcast on team selection coming up fairly soon, because I know we're all walking to trials at that point. But it's amazing how often we don't pick the big, rangy, long athlete in a team, and we shelve them down the line somewhere where they play at a lower level with potentially weaker coaching, weaker people around them. That can really hurt the enjoyment of that kid and the want to turn up again. Like, I know I've got an athlete at the moment that plays for me, and it's like, I feel like they could do more on a Friday night. But anytime I see them go to the next level up, they perform. It's like, why don't they do more for me on a Friday? But there are kids that sit there and give more when they're surrounded by better athletes or stronger athletes. So keeping them in those situations as well, where they can find their own pathway, is so important for our youth athletes. Like the fun and the enjoyment it's got to come first. Like, it's, as you say, Coops, what's the other 98% doing?
Well, and the big part is that fun and enjoyment doesn't mean it's not elite. Fun and enjoyment doesn't mean that it's not representative basketball.
Like, you don't have standards.
You don't
now.
Have standards, like, because your kids are enjoying it. Like, they're smiling and laughing. It's like, oh no, we're not working hard enough, or whatever it may be. Like, this is a game, and you ask any of the best players in the world, they love it. That's why they play it. We recently had Delhi record a message to our under 16 boys who competed in Perth, and, you know, credit to his character to send that video to us. And what he spoke about from his time in under 16s was all the stuff outside of basketball, how it made him feel, the relationships, the all the fun that they had in the bus, and all those sorts of things that's part of coaching, like us building an experience that these young people are going to remember a long time from now, is so important. So
to keep them in the game, we want basketball lifers. Right. Like, you don't – playing ends quite early, you know, in the grand scheme of things. You probably start around about 8 if you start, you know, from the beginning, and you've finished more often than not in your early 30s. There's still a lot of life after that. So, you know, we want people who love the game enough to come back and coach it or ref it or run clubs or become, you know, S&C with a senior club or something, you know, those sort of things. We want to keep people in the game. There's so many other avenues to this sport that you can stay involved in, not just playing.
Makes a lot of sense. So in the interest of time, we might fly through a couple of these last ones. Naturally, we've gone over in various areas, just how it rolls. So one of the other don'ts, so this is one of yours, go overtime in practice, which links in with huddle on the bench after a game.
Yeah, you need to be respectful, especially in the junior age groups. You need to be respectful of time. You've got normally another team ready to come on and have their training after you. So by you might think, oh, it's just 1 minute, 2 minutes, whatever. That could be a massive portion of somebody's session if they've only got 30 minutes, you know. So as well as parents, often they've got more than one child, and it may not just be basketball, they might be doing other things, and they've got it timed to the minute. They're picking up this kid here, then they're driving to somewhere else to pick up that one, and you go over by 5 minutes, and that throws everything out of whack. So you need to be respectful of time. And with the bench on Friday, most places have somewhere you can go to go and have, if you're going to do a post-game chat, you know, there's 5 minute warm-up. Grab your stuff. Get out of the way, let the other team put their stuff down so they can maximize that 5 minutes and get up and down and get ready for their game. I think it's, and I don't think it comes from a bad place. I just think it comes from not knowing. A lot of the time with coach, I guess there's sort of unwritten rules, and you don't know them until you broke them. So if we can help you a little bit earlier, but yeah, you know, obviously if you're the 9:40 game, don't worry about it. But if you're any of the earlier time slots, grab your stuff, find a spot either down at the end or in the foyer or something like that. Just that bit of courtesy for the next group coming through.
Yep, I think that's an important one. And it goes the other way too, that don't have your kids charge on to put all their drink bottles and all that sort of stuff down. As like an under-18 boys team is rolling through an under-12 girls team, you know something's going to go wrong there. They will run into each other. So you do just have to be a little bit mindful of that. And it just does create a little bit of unnecessary conflict. Like, because as a coach, you're already sitting there saying, hey, come on, I start at 6 o'clock at 6:02 and you're still on the court.
Yeah.
Don't make me be the person that has to walk on there and kick them off or anything like that. So, Coos, one of the ones you had was don't try and do too much.
Less is more. Doesn't matter what the level is. We recently had a HP PD session with the great Mike Dunlap, who's obviously done a lot of work in the NBA and still does at the moment. And that was one of his biggest things is how they try to minimize information, less is more, and couldn't recommend that more highly to our outstanding listeners out there. We are so time poor, as we know. We have such a complex game that we are constantly trying to find ways to maximize time, to two-way teach, to put everything in one or two sessions. It's better to go the other way. Can you work on just one thing? I have a 15-minute segment or a 10-minute segment on, let's say 1v1 defense. I actually use an example from my own coaching recently. So I'd been trying to impact our closeouts, and we have three aspects to our closeout. So declaring the ball, hand above ball, and foot angles. So in a 15-minute 1v1 defensive segment, I've got a variety of activities, but I've been trying to get those three things in every single time. It's hard. For me, it's three things. I think it should be taken care of, even with our elite athletes. It's not. There's lots of variables. There's lots of different things going on. So recently, I was at Bendigo for an SDP session out there, and I reduced that to just hand placement. So we had 15 minutes of 1v1 defense, variety of activities to keep the context and the scenarios changing. But all my focus was hand placement. Was it hand above ball when there was a shot, or did hands come out for a chest blow and then we were able to get hands back on the ball for disruption? It was such a great change of pace, especially for my coaching, because I'd just been like everybody else trying to get everything in and trying to manage it. I really think that this is something that could help a lot of people. A good reference point is Doug Lamov's Coach's Guide to Teaching. It's an outstanding book. Highly, highly recommend for any coach at any level. And that's one of the things that he talks about, which really helps with athlete decision making.
Yep. Like it a lot. And the last one, the last don't we'll go over today, which will lead into our do's. So talk about segues, you know, here we go. Don't try and skip steps and think that things are below you, and do the work. Like, it is one of those areas where we have so many coaches in a rush to get further up the coaching tree, not realizing there are so many different branches of that coaching tree that one will lead to the next one, will lead to the next one. Sometimes you can go backwards to go forwards, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, if you happen to be a head coach of one team going up a league but going back a role, sometimes can be a great way to get through there. But honestly, it is literally a case of do the work. You don't want to be underqualified by the time that you arrive at your destination that you want to get to. The last thing you want to do is then be trying to get into that sink or swim mentality. And I'll piggyback on your book recommendation, Coops. There's a great one out called, and I've gone blank on, Do Hard Things. It is from the Growth Equation podcast, which is a fantastic read. And it talks about that sink or swim mentality. And it's okay, well, don't throw someone in a situation to sink or swim if they don't know how to swim. Because what do you expect is going to happen in that space? Of course they're going to drown. So it is a case of you want to be over-prepared and over-qualified by the time you hit that point, so that you know what you're doing when you get there. Because it is a long time that if you arrive somewhere and you're potentially not good enough or not qualified for it, one, you'll be found out. But two, you'll probably have to do double the work that you've used to get there in the first place to get back up to that point, because your reputation will precede you in that space. So it is a case of don't be so quick to say, I need that job and I need that job and then I need that job and why aren't I moving forward in my pathway? Just because you've seen another coach move forward doesn't mean you're ready to move forward, or whatever the case may be. But it is something that our coaches have to be really cognizant of, especially this time of year where coaching appointments are coming out at various clubs, state teams, those kinds of things. Not everyone's on the same pathway. Some people have just got different experiences than you do, which puts them in a different position than you are.
Well, and that's, I suppose, to jump onto that one as well, that another do is do continue to apply for roles even if you've missed out. You know, there's a tendency to sort of, I guess, crack it a little bit and say, well, that's it, I'm not going to do it, or, you know, I'll go find something else, or I'm not going to be a part of that anymore. We see it a lot with state teams. And there's so much that goes into any appointment, not just a state team appointment, but any sort of appointment, whether it be juniors or seniors. And sometimes it can come down to things like timing. You know, a coach has had a role, has got the role before you and are still within their, I guess, cycle of coaching. And so, you know, it's not just about the X's and O's. It's not just about the ability to coach. You know, timing does play a part. You know, what you've done, what you haven't done, all those sort of things. Sometimes you might just need another year, or you know, there's a plan. So, you know, I think it's really important to continue to put your hand up. And I'll throw this one out to all the female coaches out there, because I think we're probably a little worse at it than our male colleagues, in that we almost find it embarrassing to have that rejection, I guess. And so we go, oh, well, I knew I wasn't up to it, and we sort of withdraw. you know, find out why and then work on it and stay in it. You know, it's yeah, again, like it's not just about the X's and O's. There could be a multitude of reasons.
Yeah. Drawing on my own experiences, I'd been working probably feverishly to keep climbing the ladder to the point where I definitely lost sight of my why, had lost sight of the things that were in front of me, where I've had some really good, how would you frame it? Just evaluation, self-evaluations, in the last few years, and obviously COVID played a big part in that. Getting removed from a couple of jobs was difficult, but it brought me back to this job and allowed me to just, again, have that moment of like, okay, why am I in this? What's my purpose? And just say, okay, let's be great in this job. Let's just slow things down. I'd done a really poor job of comparing myself to other coaches. You know, he's this age and he's already there, or he's younger than me and he's already there. And not only is that an unhealthy way to go through things, whether you're in basketball or not, but it takes you out of enjoying the process and just having the day-to-day, those fantastic experiences of coaching. And I wasn't doing that. I was moving really quick. I'm in my 20th something year of coaching, and there's too many years that I look back on and I couldn't tell you much about it, because it was about getting through it to get to the next job or get to the next year and keep growing. So, I use my own examples to coaches to just say, slow down. Sherry Cole has a great quote: how do you get the next job? Be great in the one you're in now. And to not to blow smoke or anything, but as soon as I had that conversation with myself and actually did slow down and started enjoying things a little bit more, I got a job offer in the German professional league, and then I got headhunted for a high performance job for an entire country. So it's funny how the universe works in that respect. So I use that example in just helping coaches out there just slow down. Enjoy the process, be where your feet are, and you'd be really surprised what doors open up for you.
And I think that's a do that I have that I just sort of came up with through whilst we've been speaking. You have to look after you. You know, as coaches, we put everybody else first, and that might be look after your sleep, look after your diet, look after just, you know, your mental health, look after your family and your friends and being social and things like that. Of course, there's a certain level, especially if you're ambitious and you want to climb the tree, there's a certain level of work that you need to do, and that takes commitment. But, you know, I know for a fact that, you know, recently I was so unhappy with, you know, my weight and how I looked, and a lot of that time that was because that was a drive-through Macca's or a drive-through KFC on the way home from something, or an emotional response to something because of either how a team has gone or how, you know, whatever's happened. I was so focused, similar to you, I was so focused on everything for the team and for the players and for the role and all that sort of stuff, and I forgot about me. And I think things have certainly changed recently for me. I've put time into myself and I feel like I'm a better coach for it. You know, I've lost a bit of the weight. I'm happier with myself, within myself, but also I can get through camps now without being utterly exhausted at the end of it. You know, like I'm certainly tired, but, you know, it was, as you would know, I'd come home, I'd lay down on the couch and I was done for like 14 hours. Like, you know, it was
a lot of gaming time in the group. Like, my FIFA ranking went up.
But it's a really important one. You have to look after you. You can't, how do you expect to look after others and look after the athletes if you're not looking after yourself?
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, and there's been a whole bunch of podcasts on coach welfare and wellbeing that we've done alone, but there's a ton of the other ones out there as well. If you're looking for strategies around that as coaches, by all means, tap into those. One area I've got, which probably hits on a couple of different ones as well, build your coaching network. Like, and that's, I cannot stress that enough. The world of social media is a really easy one to now go and connect with other people. Don't be that coach that you only hear from someone or contact someone when you need something. And we all know this time of year is fun because we know state team appointments are coming out. We know VJBL appointments. We know senior team appointments are coming out. You can almost set your watch to it. And it's like, oh, I haven't heard from that person for a little while now. And then sure enough, I just need this, this, or this, and this. Yeah, I'm well, thanks. Like, how are you going? Like, it's that sort of thing. Like, we have so many coaches that don't necessarily have a network. They can be takers at time, and you know, we are givers by nature as coaches, so of course we always help out where we can possibly help out. But it is something that you have to be really mindful of. Build a network that is not necessarily just a basketball network. Go and tap into people from other sports, from other backgrounds that are not necessarily sport-related. Build a network that can help you, but make sure you stay tapped into that. It's got to be a two-way street. It can't just be I'm going to take and take and take. Where that leads into next is seek out mentoring, but be a mentor for others. You can't just be that. And that was a Jared Pottock quote. So props to JP. You know, one foot out the door and he's just leaving us with little gems on the way out. But it is one of those areas too where, okay, if someone else has helped you, make sure you pay that thing forward and you go and help someone else out down the line, because you might be in a really fortunate position, but someone else might be where you were 5 years ago, 6 years ago, whatever the case may be. Yeah. How you find a good mentor, how long's a piece of string? Like, honestly, it can be anyone. There are going to be some people that are really great for the here and now, but not necessarily the long term. There are some people that provide zero value to you now, but will be great for you in 10 years' time. But it's building and fostering that relationship with them that I think can really help as coaches. Like, I mean, I'm sure, Coops, you've got a network of people that you tap into when things aren't necessarily going how you want. How do you manage that along the way?
Yeah, for me, it's the ongoing relationships. And it's less to do with basketball and it's more to do with people. I'm not a great cold caller. I'm not a great on-the-phone person. Our friend up at the COE, Ash Arnott, he's got the gift of the gab and he's fantastic. Like, the guy lives on the phone and that's a skill. And he's able to build relationships through doing that. I know for me, I'm not that person. I'm a little bit more withdrawn. But when I'm around the people that either I can help impact or they can help impact me, that's the time that I'm trying to really invest as much as possible. I'm finding those people. I'm having some meaningful conversations. I'm reiterating to them my availability around support or if they just want to talk basketball or maybe some other things are going, trying to be better in getting our younger coaching cohort more involved with what we're doing, and again, making myself available to them. So if I'm passing on any hopeful strategy for coaches in a similar spot, is if you do struggle on the phone and trying to build a network that way or even through social media, just make sure when you are face-to-face that you really make the most of those opportunities.
Yeah, I think a really, really important part of it too is, you know, make sure you show that gratitude to somebody that has given you their time and shown you that, you know, and it doesn't necessarily have to be a mentor as such. It could be people within your networks, or, you know, make sure you say thank you, you know, make sure you give them a call and say, hey, you know, I've got this job. Now, this could just be first team on a Friday, your first ever first team on a Friday night, you know, give them a call. You might think they won't care. They'll care. Like, there's nothing more fulfilling as a mentor to hear that somebody you've been helping has achieved something that they want, regardless of whether you think it's a big deal or not. It is. So show that gratitude and again, then pay it forward when your time comes. But I think with, you know, if you're going to seek out mentors and, you know, there's always something, we say it on the pod all the time, there's always something to learn. And, you know, if you reach out to somebody and say, hey, can I come watch your practice? You know, get to as many practices as you can. And even people whose philosophies you don't necessarily agree with, there's still a lot to learn. And if you get put on the clock, that's not a punishment. It's, you know, that's, you're actually being used within the session rather than just sitting in the stand. You know, it's seen as, I think, below a lot of people. You're contributing to that session. You're helping that coach. That, what do you think is then going to come back to you? You know, that's going to be reciprocated. So I think sometimes, and it's probably a don't, but I think sometimes the ego gets in the way a little bit, and as a result that hinders our ability to take everything that we could from that moment. So instead of sitting on there doing the clock and then focusing on what's in front of you, we're sitting there and we're stewing on, why am I on the clock? I coach this. I shouldn't be doing the clock. I should be on court. And we've just missed what what was in front of us. So I think definitely get out, get to see as many coaches as you can. Like I said, even if you don't agree with their philosophies, I think I've spoken about it on the pod before. I went and ran the clock for Nick Abdusevic at one of his, when he was coaching a state team years and years ago. And I'm not a shuffle coach. It's not something I believe in, but I learned so much from that session. You know, detail, how to coach it, how to set those standards, all those sort of things. It was great. So yeah, I can't, that's a massive do for me, is get to as many sessions as you can.
Yeah, that's certainly how I started in the state program, was on the clock. Like, just happened to be walking through the stadium at the right time and jumped on board, and it's like, oh cool, and spent 10 plus years in the state program because of it. But there are still people that I talk to from that first session now, and like, that's a relationship that lasts a long time. Like, couple of them are directors of coaching at various clubs and those types of things. Some have stepped away, had kids, and are coming back into the program now. And they're like, you're still doing this? It's like, yeah, sucker written all over me. Like, it's that kind of thing. But it is that sort of thing. Like, don't be scared to pick up the phone. And because I'm very similar to you, Coops, I'm a bad cold caller. Like, I'll wait until someone comes to me and then I'll, you know, give them all my attention, no question. But I'm not great at that sort of stuff. But it doesn't take much to send just a random text. It's, you know, the amount of times, like, and I'm sure you both deal with this as well, you won't hear from someone for 3 or 4 months and you get a random message from them relating to something that you've both experienced like maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And it's like, yeah, that's a pretty funny memory. Like, it is that kind of thing. But that's the stuff that is actually keeps you engaged and builds your network and builds that little bit of a relationship that you can call on those people if you need them. Like, there are tons of people we talk about that it's like, look, if I called that person at 3 a.m. on the street and homeless, I know that answer. Or they come and they're the ones you want to try and invest your time with. Like, yeah. Not just, I only contact them when I need something in that space.
And I'd like to put a bit of a challenge out, I guess, to coaches. Just send them, those that are listening, send a message with no real agenda to a coach. Whether it could even just be, hey, I saw what you did on Friday and I thought it was great. Well done. Or just something, you know, send something to someone within your network with no agenda. And again, watch what happens, because it's awesome.
Well, and there's one area with that, and although a little bit of smoke here, unfortunately, which is not really my wheelhouse. I'm not great at this sort of stuff. Story time.
Yes.
There was a number of years ago, we happened to be watching a game over Australia Day weekend. Zoe was watching her niece, and we were both in the gym at the same time. And the coach from the other team got smashed by a team that simply pressed the pants off them all game, but didn't stop coaching the entire time. Like, was enthusiastic, was great with the kids, was positive, kept giving direction, didn't sit and sulk and pout or go the refs or anything like that. Was just a great coach. And it's like, geez, do you think we should go and talk to them after the game? Like, and just sort of pump up the tires, because they were young. Like, they were still a young coach in their coaching. It's like, yeah, we'd probably want it if that was us. Like, someone to come and say, actually, not a bad job. Like, you did what you were supposed to do. Went and spoke to that coach. A little bit of back and forth over the years. That coach is now starting to get involved with BV programs. And it's like, well, great. That's kind of what you want. So don't be scared to reach out to someone, even if, you know, they're not necessarily coaching the same level you're coaching. Don't be scared to talk to someone after a game and say, hey, great job. Like, you did a really good job with that, because you don't really know if that will keep them in the sport, whether they could have been going, oh, I can't do this anymore. Like, we've just been poleaxed. You know, the last thing I want to do is now go and coach this again. Like, reach out to some of those people. Like, I cannot encourage it enough. Like, there's a lot of people out there that will really appreciate the time and the effort to just pat them on the back and say, hey, good job with what you've done there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So as we're moving through these, prep for interviews. So do prep for interviews. And this goes both ways. Now, a really interesting part is I love interviews personally. Like, I love going through them purely because I get to test myself, which I think is a really cool way of doing things. Like, am I prepared for what's going to come across the table? But it's also a little bit of a fact-finding mission for me to find out more about where I'm interviewing and what I'm interviewing for. Like, do I actually want to be a part of this? Like, just because you're offered a job doesn't mean you have to accept it to start off with. So I think it's one of those areas too where we get to interviews and people are very blasé with how they do it. I've got a little bit of a rule, like, and despite my attire usually, never be the worst dressed person in the room. Like, that's a really big thing for me. If you feel like this is a trackies and hoodie job, you need to be in slacks, like, and a press shirt. Like, there's got to be, you've got to go in not feeling like, oh, I've butchered this. Like, I haven't done this the right way. So for me, it's a really big thing of be prepared for it, be dressed for it, then test your, I suppose, knowledge or your philosophies against what you're applying for is a really big thing.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think you must have knowledge of your age group, if it's for, you know, a state or anything, but you must have knowledge of your age group, whether it be your own or who you're coming up against. Like, for a state team, for instance, you need to have knowledge of the other states. If it's for a junior club, you have to know your age group. You also have to have a clear timeline of when you're going to train, if it's for state teams, and where that's going to be. If it's for juniors, you know, what are you wanting to, what's your plan? You know, what are you going to be better at the end of the season than you are now? So, and how are you going to implement that? I think the biggest frustration for me as somebody who sits on interviews are people that just sort of come in and go, oh, I'm not sure, or I don't know. And it's like, you need to know. You've put your hand up to say, I want to coach this. How do we have faith that you're going to be able to, you know, get this right as best as possible if you haven't done that preparation? If this is your prep for this interview, what is your prep for the season or the tournament going to be like? I just think, and I think I sat and listened during the COVID shutdown, one of your friends, I can't remember who it was, but was having an interview and got a bunch of you together and you did a Zoom interview, like a mock interview, and it was great. Like, sitting and listening to it and the things that, you know, may come up, the things that probably won't come up but you're ready for anyway, keep you on your toes, that sort of thing. I thought it was great. I'd encourage anybody going into, even if it's not just basketball, even if it's just life for work, to do that and you know, have that mock interview and get ready. So then whenever anything's thrown at you, you're ready and prepared.
Yeah. Just scaffolding on that, for me, the preparation doesn't start when the application goes in. So application goes in, you get contacted back, you've got an interview. Okay, now I'm going to start preparing for this interview. The preparation started when you decided to be a coach, and the building of your authenticity, the building of your philosophy, your strategies, your systems, your styles. Yeah, are you writing those things down? Are you putting them into documents, into hard copy that you're going to be able to draw on, go back to, alter? Again, I just draw on my own experiences. Bill Runchy was the director of coaching at Sandringham when I moved there years and years ago now, and he was fantastic, a really positive influence. He had a coach's manual that was there for the program, and I grabbed it and went through it, and then Bill and I sat down. I said, look, do you mind if I kind of take this and create something of my own from it? And, you know, like a good coach, he's like, yeah, man. He goes, go for it. You know, pull it to shreds, add, borrow, whatever it is, because obviously he'd borrowed a lot of the stuff himself. And then through my own journey of having this blueprint, this starting point, I kept creating something that manifested into my philosophy. And then when I got an interview for the director of coaching job in Ballarat, I had something. I had something ready to go that I could talk to, that that built my interview process from. And then again, with a little bit more of a rework, became the coach's manual for Ballarat when I got there. So just putting the prep time in earlier can really help, so I highly recommend.
I think there's a massive do that you've just done there, Coops, which is throw the coach assist, right? So Coops is just, you know, we all steal. We all know that. That's Absolutely. Basically what coaching is. But those that try and pass stuff off as theirs or their original idea or their, you know, whatever that is, get seen through really quickly. What you just did there in obviously naming Bill and, you know, throwing what we call throw the coach assist, you know, and you do it at practice. I like to try and do it at practice if I can as well. You know, if you come up and say, hey, this, this and this, I'll say, Coop's just made a great point and then go through it. It's not in any way, I guess, dimming you, your ability, anything like that. What it's actually doing is brightening up the coaches that are giving up their time to be with you, that care enough to come and tell you something that they've seen. So always, wherever you can, throw the coach assist.
Yep, and we've touched on this a little bit now, is constantly review yourself and your philosophy. Like, it's a massive do. Just because you thought something 5 years ago doesn't mean you still think something now. I think that, and we'll do a podcast down the road a little bit on coaching philosophy and how to develop it and what it should look like and those types of things. So we won't delve too far into this. But don't just be, well, this is what I did last year, or this is what I did with this team, so this is what I'm going to do again. Understand you've got different people, you've got different athletes in front of you. What you did previously may not work this time around. So be constantly searching for other things and have a bit of an open mind to things. Like, just because someone does something some way doesn't, and it conflicts with yours, doesn't mean it's right or it's wrong. It's just different. Like, that's an okay thing. Have an open mind to things, and you know, you might learn something from it. You might sit there and say, actually, it's completely validated why I don't like it, because I've tried it and I still don't like it, so I'm still cool with that.
And that's still valuable time, isn't it?
Absolutely, it is. Like, I think that's still a really good thing to be able to have in that space. So the constant review is really important. Is, you know, every 2 to 3 months, okay, go through your philosophy. Do I still believe in this, this, and this? No. Okay, what would I change? How would I change it? That type of stuff is really valuable, I think, in that space.
Yes, that I've been doing, borrowing from Mark Bennett and Alan Keane, is hot-cold reviews. So finish practice, gather your coaching staff, or, you know, it might just be yourself if you don't have an extended staff, have that hot review. You know, what do we do well and why? What can we do better and how? Like, just grab something while it's fresh in your mind, get it down on paper. Like, really simple, can take 5 minutes. And then on Monday or Tuesday, whenever, you know, you can get together again, might be as a staff or on your own, and you have the cold review. Maybe it's over some film. You know, maybe you go back and just have a little bit more of an in-depth think. But for me, that process has been really, really helpful. And then I think that also ties into what you're talking about, that 1 to 3 month review should be tied into your periodization. And with the way that the VJBL season works in particular, you really need to have a periodization table around what you're working on, when are you working on it, and how does it reflect grading, you know, whatever league you stay in, the ethos of your club, so that you can look at it. Obviously, grading, you know, is your kind of your priority and really kicks the season off. So how you're training your group in that grading phase, basically just to win, because obviously we want our teams to play in the highest level, and we understand that winning can prioritize over development in that aspect. So in your periodization, you want to be working on a press breaker, some things that you know are going to play well to the strength of your group. Once you qualify, then that periodization table should immediately shift to almost the first, you know, 6 to 8 weeks of the season being like preseason. Skill development, culture building, shooting, all those sorts of things. And then
wouldn't be a
problem. Smile on his face when he said shooting.
It was almost like I've been waiting for this opportunity.
It's like, we've been going way too long for me not to have brought up shooting. And then obviously you're having your evaluations based around that periodization. I know that at this point, you know, of month two, we evaluate, are these the things that we need to be working on? Are there some other things that have crept in? And not only is this important for where you are now, but for all those coaches out there that want to go on and make money from the sport and coach at the highest level, that's the sort of detail you need to coach in. So why wait till then? You know, have your habits aligned with your goals now.
Yep, absolutely. So a couple of last little things before we wrap up. Do stay in your lane and outsource where you need to outsource. Just because you've watched a 15-minute on minute YouTube video on plyometrics does not make you a qualified S&C coach. Outsource that one to someone that actually knows better, because we can do more damage than we can do help in that space. So be very careful on what you do there. Like, you know, a little boxing session. You know, if you're not a boxing coach, don't have a boxing session. get someone else to come and do that for you. And the last one I would say is do invest in yourself as a coach. So if you want to do something and you want to do something well, put the time and put the effort into it. Now, whether that be coaching courses, coaching clinics, networking, whatever the case may be, equipment, those types of things, you do have to invest in yourself to actually give it value in that space as well. Like, and I mean, ironically, looking around the room at the moment, when this podcast first started, it was one microphone on a laptop and we'd do zero preparation for it. We would open the laptop and we'd all try and like huddle around the microphone as close as we could to each other to like make sure that someone could hear us. And there was always someone that was slightly out and you couldn't hear at the start. So because we actually do want to take this seriously, which may surprise some people, we have invested in better equipment since. So hopefully the audio reflects that. We do have cool little sound effects like story time and, you know.
Loved it, Robbie.
The occasional other little things on the side. But from our end, like we wanted to take this seriously because this is actually a really valuable medium for us to talk to coaches. We were just talking about the numbers before when Jared was in the room. Like, there are some of these podcast listens that have had upward of like 2,500 listens. So for us, that's fantastic. We can't get 2,500 people into a coaching course or a coaching clinic, but this is a medium for us to do it. So from our end, this is an investment by us to try and get this better. Similar sort of deal. Like, we bought some of those little clip-on microphones that work Bluetooth so that when you film, you can then be mic'd up and you can go back and listen to yourself. That's an investment to try and get us better as coaches that we can then go and use to try and, you know, just find ways to do things better. But there is almost a little bit of pressure that comes with that because once you've spent the money on it, you better use it. Otherwise, it's just a waste of money. So big shout out to Rode who provide all our servicing needs for the audio.
And if they want to sponsor.
Yeah. More than happy for them to sponsor. Like, there's no issue on that end. But it is one of those things where if you put the investment in, you almost, like, you've got some skin in the game then. Like, you're now more obligated to go and put more time, more effort, more energy into it, which will make you a better coach in the end. So please do invest in yourself, coaches. If you guys got any other do's before we knock this thing over?
Probably the biggest one for me is clear and consistent messaging. You know, vague things like, you know, be smart. What to a junior athlete, what does that mean? You know, does that mean you want me to curl? Does that mean you want me to lift? Does that mean you want me to, you know, run the lane, the outside lane, the inside lane? Does that, you know, what does that mean? You know, and the biggest one for me, I guess, is when an athlete maybe breaks out of your offense or out of your structure, if you're willing to applaud it and like it when it's a make, you have to accept it when it's a miss. You know, the old write the story in the air sort of thing. It's a good or a bad decision before the shot goes in or before the shot misses. So, and be consistent with that. Rather than, you know, I see a lot of coaches get all up and about because, you know, one pass, catch and shoot three goes in. Yay. The next possession down, one pass, catch and shoot three, it misses. That's the wrong shot. Well, hold on. It's the exact same shot as the possession before. And we're all happy about that. So just being consistent with your messaging, I think, goes a long way, especially with the junior athletes. You know, obviously, as you get to seniors, you can have certain rules for some and not others. But in juniors, it's really, really important because confusion leads to withdrawal, which leads to, you know, not enjoying it and then, you know, eventually walking away from the game.
Yeah, just doubling down from earlier. It doesn't matter what level it is. Do remember it's a game. Do remember it's supposed to be fun. And do remember your responsibility in that.
Yep, absolutely. Love that. Coaches, thanks very much for jumping in. Apologies if this sounded a little bit preachy today. Yeah. It was not done that way by design. But
yeah, we're not all great at these by the way. Like, I'm listening to some of these going, oh, I need some more.
Yeah, this is an ongoing process with a lot of people. But it is also one of those things where maybe you just haven't thought of this. And if this spurs you on to now go and do a little bit more work in that area, that'd be great. If you do want to continue the conversation, you can do so on Twitter via the hashtag TalkingSplit. You can obviously tag one of us in it and we'll try and get back to you as best we can, or you can just get us on the email at Basketball Victoria. We're not that hard to find. So if you do need us for anything else in that space, you are more than welcome to. Coaches, that does wrap us up for this week. Thank you all for jumping in to the Talking Split podcast. And we will catch you all next week on the pod. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe on iTunes and Spotify.